From the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, August 21st. A new chapter in the history of legal same-sex marriage in New Mexico has been written today in Doña Ana County. County Clerk Lynn Ellens has begun issuing licenses to those parties seeking them in a format without gender-specific references. Ellens says he's empowered to do so based on a widely discussed legal opinion, endorsed by the Attorney General last month, that the state's equal protection laws requires the state to provide the same benefits of marriage extended to other couples. And we'll have more on this story for you coming up a bit later here at noon. Teachers throughout the Santa Fe Public School District have had their first pay raise in 6 years ratified by the school board. They, along with some other staff, are getting a 1.5% increase in wages. 1% of that was made possible by state lawmakers during the legislative session in a raise for all state workers. The additional 0.5% pay bump is expected to cost the school district about $400,000 annually. A jury in state district court has found a Santa Fe man guilty of aggravated battery in the 2011 death of 39-year-old Sebastian Gordon. Erasmo Baca, age 60, now faces up to 3 years in prison for his actions during a fistfight on the Santa Fe Plaza. Baca claimed he had acted in self-defense after being accosted by the man seeking to sell him jewelry. Witnesses for the prosecution testified that Baca was no longer being threatened when he delivered a blow that knocked Gordon to the ground, causing fatal injury. After 1 year on the job, Santa Fe Community College president Anna Cha Guzman has received support of her efforts thus far from the school's governing board and members of the public. Tuesday evening heard a summary performance review evaluation, Guzman's first since taking over the post from former president Sheila Ortego. The board will continue her 4-year contract at $196,000 annually, with another review to take place in 6 months. Voters in Rio Rancho have rejected a measure that would have halved the amount of the city's gross receipts taxes directed toward higher education facilities. Tuesday's special election was a single-item ballot and the city's first election to employ a voter photo ID requirement enacted last year. Santa Fe-based immigrant rights advocate Somos Un Pueblo Unido is set to release a study showing that employers steal wages from 1 out of 4 Mexican immigrant workers. Furthermore, only 12% of these wage theft victims report the crime or attempt to recover their stolen wages. The independent study was performed by UNM Professor of Political Science and Sociology Andrew Schrank and UNM doctoral student Jessica Garrick. The full report will be distributed tomorrow at Attorney General Gary King's Albuquerque office, with some victims of wage theft and other workplace abuses recounting their experiences. Santa Fe County advises residents that a series of public meetings begins next week on capital improvement projects. Both late morning and early evening sessions are scheduled to facilitate participation by the general public and to hear their suggestions. The projects comprise a wide array of categories, including roads, housing, water quality issues, and community services. The first meeting is to take place Monday at 11:30 a.m. at the Edgewood Senior Center. And weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today through Friday with highs in the low 80s. Each day brings a 20% chance for isolated late afternoon and early evening thundershowers. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 79 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon will continue in just a moment.
Jim Hightower comes to town this weekend for 2 events to benefit KSFR. He'll be at the Museum Hill Cafe on Saturday at 5:30 with snacks and music from Swing Soleil. You can also have breakfast with Jim at 10:30 on Sunday at the Inn at Loretto. Seating for the breakfast is very limited. To join us for either event, call the station at 428-1527. That's 428-1527 for an evening with Jim Hightower on Saturday at Museum Hill Cafe or breakfast on Sunday at the Inn at Loretto.
At Noon on KSFR, now segues to today's feature stories. The quest for marriage equality in New Mexico by same-sex couples has taken a bold step forward today as the Doña Ana County Clerk has begun issuing non-gender-specific licenses. County Clerk Lynn Ellens is an attorney and says he's confident recent legal opinions, including one from New Mexico Attorney General Gary King, indicate the state may issue such licenses under the state constitution's equal protection provisions. Before today's action, Ellens conferred with a number of supporters, including the progressive advocacy group Progress Now New Mexico. Joining us now is that organization's executive director, Patrick Davis. Pat, give us your thoughts on today's activity.
This is big news for New Mexico. It's a real big benchmark moment. Following the fall of DOMA and Proposition 8 in California, the movement for marriage equality in New Mexico has been moving fast and furious with the Attorney General's statements and a number of lawsuits. The county clerk in Doña Ana County has been on the forefront of this. Together with Representative Bill McCamley, he asked the Attorney General for an opinion on New Mexico's law relating to same-sex marriage, sort of endorsing the city of Santa Fe's resolution adopting a path for New Mexico to recognize same-sex marriage under the law. Late yesterday, we learned that he was setting up a process to begin issuing those licenses today. So it was really big news. Some folks from Doña Ana County that were invited were there at 8 o'clock this morning, received the very first licenses, and we understand that they're already married legally, according to the county clerk there. So this is a really big step for New Mexico equality.
And talk about your organization's participation in the marriage equality effort statewide.
Progress Now is the state's largest progressive network. We have over 100,000 members working on a number of causes, but marriage equality was one of our first and it continues to be. So during the legislative session, more than 7,000 people helped us to deliver letters and petitions supporting a constitutional amendment for marriage equality that just simply didn't quite make it. We were proud to sort of break the news about to work with the city of Santa Fe to spread the word about their new legal opinion for a route to recognize same-sex marriage under the law. And so we were deeply honored yesterday when the county clerk's office reached out to us and asked if we would be interested in sharing this news today with the rest of New Mexico and the country. And so we think it's a natural progression. We've been working on this for a long time. We have a lot of members who see this not only as a progressive political issue, but as just a basic family issue for New Mexico, and we're more than happy to spread it.
This comes at a time just after the state Supreme Court said they were not willing to address the matter at this point, but offered it should seek guidance in lower courts. Can you speak to those lawsuits now pending?
Well, obviously, when it gets into the legal process, we don't have a formal position in that process. But what I can tell you is if you look at what's happened on the federal level, from following the Supreme Court's decision that was going to essentially punt the decision on marriage equality back to states, New Mexico is really the only state left whose law provides for this as it currently stands, in that our law simply says that marriage is a contract between two people, and it's gender neutral. And so just like the federal court kicked this back to the states, New Mexico's Supreme Court essentially kicked this issue back to the individual court districts, in this case Albuquerque and Santa Fe, to decide that issue on their own. At this point, it appears that Doña Ana County is now taking the most proactive steps to begin issuing licenses based on the Attorney General's filing and a clear reading of the law and this new endorsed opinion for Santa Fe. So I think what we've seen really quickly is that the legal process is underway in a number of counties. It's always possible that there will be others, but there's almost a race to the Supreme Court at some point to get this done. But in the meantime, folks are stepping up and taking proactive action based on all these new legal developments.
Are you aware of any legal mechanism that can now be enjoined to bar Doña Ana County's clerk from issuing any more licenses?
I'll tell you, that's been a part of the conversation. I think as this formula moves forward, I think it's harder and harder, but we're clearly going to be watching for that, and we're going to be ready to defend the clerk's action in whatever way we can with our members and with other actions. It's not likely. At this point, sort of the processes are in place. The county clerk has a firm legal ground to stand on. It's not likely the Attorney General would challenge this at this point based on his previous filings. And so to find someone who has standing in this case to challenge this in court, is not unreasonable, but it may not be likely. And even if it is, I think there are a number of people now that are lined up ready to defend the county clerk and to protect the marriages that are now legal in Dona Ana County at the moment.
And your final thoughts on the topic today?
You know, for us, I think it's really exciting to see that New Mexico really is now the newest state and to issue same-sex licenses and to get to marriage equality. But like I said, we're seeing these from Santa Fe to Albuquerque and now in Dona Ana County. We're moving progress forward in New Mexico on a number of levels. Those processes in Albuquerque and Santa Fe are still going to continue, but right now the real focus is going to be down there. We applaud what the clerk, Lynn Ellens, is doing down there. He's really showed some political courage to step up, and we think and we hope that other clerks will follow his lead, and we're prepared to stand with him and say thank you.
Patrick Davis from Progress Now New Mexico, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. And now we're joined by Dona Ana County Clerk Lynn Ellens. Sir, you took a bold move this morning. Tell us how that came to be.
Well, back in March, there was a lawsuit started in Bernalillo County to require the county clerk to issue a marriage license to people of the same gender. Shortly thereafter, an action was commenced in Santa Fe County as well. And eventually, both of the lawsuits requested the Supreme Court to make an immediate decision on the validity of same-gender marriages. The court refused to do that and sent it back to the district courts. So we've had about 5 months or so that have already expired and nothing has happened. And now they're back into the district court all over again. We're looking at another 6 or 8 months probably before a decision is rendered, whether it's by the district court or the state Supreme Court. Under the New Mexico Equal Rights Protection section of the state constitution, it says specifically, and this is very unique to New Mexico, equality of rights under law shall not be denied on account of the sex of any person. Interestingly, the Supreme Court asked the Attorney General to file a brief on the question of whether the Supreme Court should take jurisdiction. And the Attorney General properly argued that no, that for various legal reasons, the Supreme Court should send this back to the district court. But in so doing, the Attorney General also said that if the matter were to ever come again before the Supreme Court, that the Supreme Court declare same-gender marriages legal in New Mexico under the Equal Protection Clause that I just read. Based upon that, and based upon the delay to date and the delay in the future, I made the determination that it was time to move.
And how many same-sex couples have availed themselves of receiving a license today?
As of now, approximately 15, and we expect more this afternoon when the information is more broadly disseminated.
And those first few people into the office this morning, how did they know that they would indeed be issued a license and not turned away?
We had contacted some of them last night who had contacted us in the past about whether or not we were authorized or would issue such a license, and we kept their names and on the file, and we called them and said, if you wish to get a license, come on down tomorrow. Some people heard about it, it's all over the social media, and just walked in. I mean, they didn't get the word. We had the first couple that came in, the two men, said they've been waiting 31 years to do this. And another couple come in, said they've been waiting 43 years to do this. It's about time that we let them do this.
And as the story has unfolded this morning, are you being heaped with praise or blame? What's been the reaction thus far?
So far, everybody's been positive. I don't expect that to last forever. But so far, people have been in a congratulatory mode.
Dona Ana County Clerk Lynn Ellens, many thanks for speaking with us here at KSFR today.
You're welcome, sir.
And at noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
19 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. A new study shows that New Mexico is making some improvement when it comes to obesity among our population. Dr. Patty Morris is the director of the Obesity, Nutrition, and Physical Activity Program for the New Mexico Department of Health. She joins us now to discuss the findings. Patty, there are some positive findings in this study, are there not?
We've actually had two recent reports that have come out. The most recent one, which I think you're referring to, is looking across all states at the prevalence of obesity amongst our adults. And the good news for New Mexico is that, in fact, we're doing better in terms of the number or the percentage of people who have obesity compared to the rest of the states. We rank 20th best. In other words, there are 30 or 29 states that have higher obesity rates amongst the adult population than we do. And when we look at this 2012 report, in other words, it just came out, however, it's looking at data from the 2012 year, we find that we're beginning to see a flattening in the prevalence of obesity for our population. And that's really good news. And that is mirrored by a report that came out a couple weeks ago looking at our low-income preschool children. And again, that was done in 2012, and we're beginning to see a flattening in terms of the prevalence rate. That's good news because for the last 20 years, we've watched it continue to rise from year to year to year. So while we don't think we're out of the woods, the prevalence is still too high. 1 in 3 adults are obese, and in terms of the preschool population, it's still about 1 in 5. So we all know how hard it is to reduce our own waistlines, and so we want to try to prevent obesity so we're not having to try to reverse it. And you know, New Mexico often rates at the bottom of everything. So this was really pretty good news that we're faring better than half of the states. It's still not good enough.
While that ranking nationwide might appear to be average at best, when you consider that a number of New Mexico residents have a genetic predisposition toward obesity, it's still a notable achievement, is it not?
Exactly. I mean, it's huge. Now, let's not forget, though, that Native Americans in New Mexico still have the highest rates of prevalence of any race or ethnic group in the state. And we're seeing for adults about 40% of American Indians are obese. And even when we look at our elementary school age population, we're seeing in third grade 30%. So we have a long way to go for the tribal populations that we have here in our state.
And when we look at the issue of obesity, we're not simply dealing with concerns over that a pair of trousers might be too tight. We're dealing with significant health concerns, are we not?
That's correct. What we do know is people who are obese are more likely to have type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and other chronic diseases. We know that obesity is preventable through making healthy food choices, through being more active, turning off the TV, getting out and moving. And so there are really severe consequences for obesity. And the important thing to remember, or, you know, a significant piece to remember, is really that we're seeing some early signs of chronic diseases in our adolescents. We never saw type 2 diabetes a generation ago in our youth. We're seeing that today. So we're seeing metabolic evidence of fatty liver tissue and some high cholesterol rates that we never saw a generation ago in our youth. So obesity has huge consequences on the health of both our youth and the future of our state.
Is it possible any of the decrease in obesity could be due to a lack of food because of the poor economy?
I don't think so. I don't think you can blame it on the economy. I think food is relatively cheap, and especially the high-fat, less nutritionally dense foods are fairly cheap. I think it's more a result of local communities are really getting out there and trying to do something, whether it's school system, which are providing more salads. For example, in the upper northwest part of the state, we're now seeing that in elementary schools, they're offering chicken salads as an entree rather than some of the higher fat entrees. We're seeing smoothies being offered rather than pancakes and sausages for breakfast. We're seeing community organizations work with their local school districts as well as their municipality governments to, you know, open up schoolyards and neighborhoods to encourage the families and neighbors to really get up and move and be outdoors and be active. We're seeing communities grow their own, you know, home gardens, community gardens, school gardens. So I think we have an increased awareness that obesity is a huge problem. I think families are more conscientious about trying to get out and move and be more active and eat better. And I think community organizations and the state are really trying to take a more proactive role in really motivating people to eat better and be active. And we do know that those are the two behaviors that, if done on a regular basis, can really prevent obesity.
Anything you'd like to add?
We have a lot of work still ahead of us, but we seem to be getting a handle on it. And I really believe it's obesity. Too often we want to blame it either on the individual or on a particular system like fast food. But really, it's both an individual and a cultural and societal problem. And I think we all have to come together to really work on different parts of the solution. There's no easy answer to this. And it's going to take us a long time to reverse. It took us a long time to get to this place. And we just have to be patient and remain dedicated and steadfast.
Dr. Patty Morris from the New Mexico Department of Health, many thanks for joining us today. And for more information on the latest obesity figures, visit the Department of Health website. At Noon on KSFR continues with more features in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Pueblo of Tezuque Flea Market, the flea for over 20 years, hosting local and international vendors dealing in everything from handcrafted imports and old pawn jewelry to specialty foods and garage sale finds. Located at 15 Flea Market Road in Santa Fe, right next to the Opera, the Tezuque Flea is open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from March through December. For more info, email seetheflea@yahoo.com or visit online at tezuquefleamarket.com.
27 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The Santa Fe Association of Realtors has released a poll of attitudes and opinions of people likely to vote in the upcoming March 2014 municipal election and the November general election beyond that. Joining us now to discuss that poll is Victoria Murphy, president of the association. Victoria, start first of all by telling us a bit about how this poll came to be.
Well, one of the things that we have the opportunity to do with our National Association of Realtors is take advantage of a lot of things that they can offer us. And one of the things that was offered recently was the ability to do a poll to see what your community is interested in liking. And it was free to us as members. And so we took advantage of that and had this poll conducted over July 29th through August 1st. They polled 400 persons, landlines and cell phones, and we got those results.
And tell us some of the major findings of the poll.
One of the biggest things that we found were, you know, the people are generally happy with the quality of life here in Santa Fe. They are enjoying everything about Santa Fe. They are very concerned about jobs, about growth, as far as the economic growth, and very concerned about water. We did have a little bit of a split between Council District 2 and Council District 4 on residential growth. That was not too much of a surprise to us, but demographically it was a little surprise on who voted which way on that poll.
Do you think that was because of the drought and the fear of outgrowing our current water resources or other reasons like overcrowding?
I think it had to do a lot with the drought. You know, and at that time when we conducted the poll, we were already into our monsoon season. But I think water is always a big issue here.
One answer that was not surprising had to do with tax increases.
That was no surprise. Nobody wants to see tax hikes at all. They want to keep all of that down, even with us having to grow in any way or do any type of economic growth.
Any other answers surprise you?
What did surprise us is the amount of persons that were polled were not satisfied with their city council members. A little over a third of them, I believe it was, stated that they would not probably reelect their own city councilors.
Have you participated in other surveys dealing with elections?
One of the other things that they did was a candidate development training, which anybody who has been in office or wants to run for office or help run a campaign. And so they brought in people from Virginia and from D.C. that came in and did the training. And so we invited people from throughout the state, had them come in for a full day of training.
And tell us, why would a realty association want to do a poll like this?
Well, as we see ourselves as realtors, we're dealing with people on a daily basis, with their homes, those that are wanting to sell them, those that are wanting to buy them, those that are wanting to move into the community. And we hear a lot of the concerns that they have. And so making sure that our community is strong and viable only helps our industry. And so that's one of the things that we want to make sure that we're always there to help the community.
So your group doesn't have a political agenda regarding this poll?
No, it just what it does is it gets the word out to all of the potential candidates that are running what the voters are looking for. For us, we do everything we can to work with the city and with the county here with everything that we're able to offer, and we're starting to get called more and more. The National Association of Realtors has so many things that they can offer besides things like this whole candidate development training that they did. We also have what's called land growth policies that we can send to the group called Robinson Cole, and we can send our land use policies to them, and they can review them and tell us where we have issues there. And so we have done that several times with the new sustainable growth plan that the county has put out. I think we've sent it to Robinson Cole at least several times, and we've had the city, when they have concerns about things that are coming up, ask us if we can get a review for them. Because, once again, it's another thing that we can offer that is free.
Is there a website folks can visit to see more information on the poll results?
Absolutely. They can go to the Santa Fe Association of Realtors site, which is sfar.com.
Victoria Murphy of the Santa Fe Association of Realtors, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Farmers Market, providing fresh, locally grown food to our community. The Farmers Market is now open every Saturday and Tuesday from 7 a.m. to noon in the rail yard. The Southside Market takes place on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 6 at the Santa Fe Place Mall parking lot, Zafferano entrance. On Sundays from 10 to 4, the market hosts the Rail Yard Artisans Market, featuring fine arts and crafts, food, music, and more. To learn more, visit santafefarmersmarket.com.
12:33 here in the KSFR newsroom. Here at the bottom of the hour is the best and most typical place to find the time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
We've had to drive around them. We've had to obey the workers holding the signs on a pole that read stop on one side, and I bet you're really frustrated on the other side. Every year, for months on end, we have more orange barrels on our streets than we have tourists. Traffic backed up, traffic built up, traffic slower than around the plaza on a non-event Saturday night. And what really bothers me are those extended corner curbs. I call them safety curbs because I think they're extended to keep pedestrians who are waiting to cross the street from getting hit by vehicles. Well, far be it from me to offer an opinion, but it seems to me that at least in Santa Fe, pedestrians who are hit by vehicles are normally moving, like walking, not standing waiting for the light to change. So why the heck has the city spent so much time and money on those aggravating stick-out curb corners? Curb the curbs, not the carbs. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And in our final feature for today's At Noon News Hour, the Food Depot is not offering another much-needed item to needy households in New Mexico. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard is here with the story.
The Food Depot is well known as the clearinghouse for foodstuffs for needy families in northern New Mexico. Now they're expanding to stock some non-food items. Sherry Hooper is the depot's executive director.
Well, the Food Depot has a long history of providing non-food items like personal care products, paper goods, household products, things like that for the agencies that we serve and the people that they help. We now have more space. As many know, we've moved into our new facility. We did that in January, and we've managed to increase our distribution of food by almost 40%. But we also now have space to do more. And we've been wanting to increase our supply of diapers to our partner agencies and people in need for some time. And we're eager now to kick off the Diaper Depot.
People have an opportunity to donate diapers to the Diaper Depot this Saturday, August 24th.
Well, the Food Depot is really stepping up our efforts to bring more disposable diapers into the food bank. We recognize that this is a huge economic issue for poor families in northern New Mexico. We also recognize that those who have jobs and need to place their children in daycare, they cannot do that unless they can provide the disposable diapers to go with their child to daycare. So we want to make sure we're helping all those low-income families we can. What we're doing is we're launching a new program called the Diaper Depot, cleverly named, I think. We have drives going on Saturday that will allow us to collect a good supply of diapers to begin this program. The Food Depot will be in 8 locations. We'll be at Smith's stores, Albertson's stores, both Whole Foods locations, and Sam's Club, all in Santa Fe, from 10 to 2 this Saturday to collect diapers. The Food Depot works with 135 nonprofit food programs throughout 9 counties in northern New Mexico. We anticipate being able to distribute diapers through those same partner agencies. Those include emergency food pantries, kitchens, shelters, daycare centers, youth programs, and other nonprofits that support people in need.
Those unable to participate in Saturday's event will have plenty of chances to give to the Diaper Depot.
Well, there are other opportunities, actually. If people aren't able to participate in the citywide diaper drive this Saturday between 10 and 2, they can look at other ways to help. They can make a financial contribution, which will allow us to purchase diapers. And we have opportunities to purchase at very low cost through wholesalers. There are other opportunities, though. If they want to do a diaper drive at their school or their religious organization, their business, whatever, we can work with them to do that. Many other opportunities. One I think is really fun is if someone is doing a baby shower for a friend or a family member, they can actually get information from us and conduct a diaper drive at their own baby shower and then donate those diapers to the Food Depot.
One question that arises is the effect of disposable diapers on the environment.
We really, really took a good look at that. And to do cloth diapers, certainly that is probably maybe better for the environment, but there are some people say not necessarily because of water usage and washing them and things like that. It's also if they decided to go through a diaper service, that can be a lot more expensive, and a lot of our low-income families, of course, couldn't afford that. But the real issue is that there are working families in need, and they can't take their children to daycare unless they can provide the disposable diapers to go with them. And that's really the crux of it for us.
The Food Depot does work with other non-food items.
Well, the Food Depot works with a lot of different non-food items. We really try to make sure we have a supply of some cleaning goods, especially personal care products. We want to make sure that people have access to toothpaste, deodorant, shampoo, soap, those kinds of things. We want to make sure that they have access to some household cleaners if they need those, laundry detergent. It's not something we get very often, but when we do, it's very much in demand. We look at paper goods, if there's toilet tissue and those kinds of things that people are in need of. We try to support them as best way we can. And recognize, too, that when they do have access to food stamps, they cannot use food stamps to purchase those personal care items and paper goods and the other things that a household needs.
Sherry Hooper with the Food Depot.
I want to make sure that people know that, again, there are opportunities to help. One is in sponsoring the Diaper Depot. We're looking for either individuals, businesses, foundations, and others who would like to be able to support the work of the Diaper Depot, make sure that we can get what we need into our facility and out to people in need. And we've really been fortunate that there have been some sponsors who have stepped up. The Brindle Foundation and the Schwanfelder family, they actually approached us with this idea a couple of years ago and have really been supportive of it. We're also very fortunate that KSFR is a sponsor of the program and Christus St. Vincent Regional Medical Center.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.